This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, two Vancouver harm reduction advocates are taking their fight for a safer drug supply to the courts. Drug User Liberation Front, or DULF, co-founders Aris Nix and Jeremy Callicum face criminal charges under Canada's Controlled Drugs and Substances Act for operating a compassion club that provided tested, regulated drugs to people at risk of overdose. Their case argues the law violates Charter's right to life, security, and equality by forcing people back to a toxic street supply. The trial begins on October 6th in BC Supreme Court and could set a national precedent for drug policy reform. Monetary support for DULF goes directly to Nix and Callicum's legal fees, which amount to $350,000, and Vancouver-based punk legends Alien Boys are using their voices to help raise money and awareness. So naturally, I went to a punk show in Prince George to learn more about DULF.
But it's for the Drug Users Liberation Front. Does anybody know who that is? Community. This is about community care and support, and our friends who took a choice and a chance and made sure that their voices were heard to be able to care for the people who are dying constantly, that are our friends and our family, of the fentanyl crisis that's been on going since 2016, as though that means anything to anybody anymore. They need our help more than ever to challenge the systems. This is how harm reduction initiatives started, is by people taking it from the bottom and bringing it to the top. So if you have an extra buck or two, please feel free to head over to the merch table and donate to the Drug Users Liberation Front to help them with their legal fees. Because community care is the best medicine at the end of the day. And now, more music.
I'm Alex from Alien Boys.
Can you explain why the Drug User Liberation Front, why does it matter to you and also Alien Boys, the band?
The Drug Users Liberation Front is important to us because they are doing the work to make safe supply in Canada a reality. And as a band, many of us have worked in harm reduction, and many of us have lost people to preventable overdoses. And so this is important. Like, what makes other intoxicants less socially acceptable than booze or weed? Prohibition hasn't ever worked. It didn't work for booze. It didn't work for weed. So we'd love to see, we support the work that DULF is doing.
After BC declared the opioid-involved overdose crisis a public health emergency in April of 2016, DULF began distributing pure heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine in 2020 to 52 pre-screened members of its Compassion Club in Vancouver's downtown East Side. You also, when we were speaking on Friday night, you also mentioned something that I thought was a kind of like powerful statement about people that we love who have died from overdose in the music scene. Can you touch on that a little bit?
I think most Canadians at this point have known of someone who has died of a preventable overdose, whether they were close or it was a friend of a friend. But I would say, on a more broader sense, if you love the arts, if you love music, if you love actors and all various types of artists, you have cared about someone who has died from a preventable overdose. The fact that we accept that this reality is how it's going to be, that if someone uses drugs that we've decided aren't socially acceptable enough, that the risk of death is high and that they just deserve that, that's messed up. These overdoses are preventable, and these people that you care about, whose work you care about, did not need to die.
Can you talk a little bit about the, like, kind of the ins and outs of fundraising at the shows, how you're doing it, how you're letting people know about it, what kind of methods you're using for donations?
Yeah, so Alien Boys has been directly fundraising for DULF's legal needs. At this point, DULF has raised $131,820. They released that number today on September 15th. And this is amazing, but they need $218,180 in the next 21 days. That's $11,000 per day. So since this is an issue that is very close to Alien Boy's heart, since we are in community with Aris and Jeremy, we we knew we needed to step it up. And so on our September 5th show in Vancouver, I had decided that I would personally donate $1,000 to their legal aid fund. And I was wondering how I could make that $1,000 mean more, make more. So Saren announced on the mic that I would donation match up to $1,000. And my plan had been to take that on the road. So however much we got on September 5th, I would take that then to Kamloops, Prince George, and Vernon when we went on our little tour the next weekend. The response was incredible, and Vancouver donated $1,511 to Dolph that night.
Dolph founders filed a constitutional challenge to criminal charges in 2024 against two of its founders, Eris Nix and Jeremy Callicum. The money being raised currently is to help with the legal fees that these two need in order to get legal representation for this case, which they wrote on their website cannot go forward with the force it deserves if they don't raise these funds.
On September 15th, they've announced that they are starting to organize an online telethon, which is being planned for October 5th. Yeah, community care is how people get their needs met when the system fails them. And the Dolph Compassion Club was that. And while people and many politicians say treatment is the only solution, we don't have that infrastructure currently. And how can we expect people who get out of treatment to succeed when nothing else changes? There's so many other issues that contribute to two overdose deaths that treatment isn't the only answer. And people cannot recover if they're dead. So we support, Alien Boys supports all aspects of harm reduction. Dolph did what the system is failing to do, and they're doing what is necessary.
For context, in 2023, the Drug User Liberation Front Compassion Club received $200,000 from Vancouver Coastal Health to assist with overdose prevention and drug checking. The health authority then canceled the contract on October 31st, 2023, following a request from Addictions Minister Jennifer Whiteside. Premier David Eby publicly acknowledged that Dolph was providing life-saving work, but that they were breaking the law. Dolph did not use provincial money to purchase the drugs online and use donations, a common talking point for BC United MLAs who balked at the notion of a compassion club.
They currently have four peer-reviewed publications out now. They provided safe, regulated drugs to a community of drug users who currently are at the mercy of really toxic drugs that are killing lots of people. And again, the overdose crisis was called in 2016 in this province. We are closing in on 10 years, and nothing the government has been doing has been really working. So what Dolph did was an amazing act of rebellion and of radical love for their community. They've shouldered a ton of risk so that we can push for change. And in order to push for the change, they need money. And that's what we're trying to help them do. We want them to have the money that they need to have the legal defense that they need, that we need to make changes in how we approach drug use in this country.
Thank you to Alex Moulton, guitarist for the band Alien Boys, for speaking with me today. Today marks 2 weeks into the BC General Employees Union strike as talks with the provincial government have stalled. The province's public service agency is the employer at the table, and this main public service agreement covers over 34,000 BC GEU members, from BC wildfire crews and correctional officers to liquor and cannabis staff, child welfare workers, and thousands of administrative professionals across government ministries. The union's main demands include competitive wages for public service workers, fair access to telework or remote work, a modernized contract that better values their work, and protection for union jobs. As of Monday, September 15th, over 6,000 BCGEU members are taking job action with 19 picket lines and an overtime ban to pressure the BC Public Service Agency to return to the bargaining table. About 4,500 BCGEU members at 22 worksites are on strike, and picket lines are up across the province, including here in Smithers at the Knorr Building, on Alfred Ave at the end of town. I went to the picket line at 3726 Alfred Ave on Friday to get a pulse check on how this strike is affecting the workers so far. But leading into that, let's hear my interview with Paul Finch, president of the BC General Employee Union, to get up to speed on the strike as of yesterday.
Currently, there's over 4,000 members of that group who are on a targeted strike action. And we've done that to minimize the disruption to the general public, to try and maximize the effect on government, to compel them to come back to the table and to negotiate a deal, which they've so far refused to do. So right now, there's an array of core services, primarily inward facing, so not the wouldn't generally impact the public. And that's everything from IT to finance operations to resource permitting and so on.
And that is what I learned when I went to go visit the workers who were walking around the Nora building here in Smithers, is kind of that it is a little more internal. But in speaking to also our MLA, Sharon Hartwell, one of her concerns was, when does this start to affect things like infrastructure? So I guess, what are the steps that go from the public not really being affected and it being a little more inward facing to really gathering and collecting strength from the public service workers?
Yeah, well, I think that time's coming soon. I mean, what we're seeing is government is still refusing to come back to the table and negotiate or move off the position that they took. The last position they took in July that was roundly rejected by our members, 93% voted in favor of a strike over that position. So very clear message from our membership. So right now, again, we've taken time to or care to minimize disruption to the public. That's going to start to change over the next several weeks as, you know, to try and compel government to come back to the negotiating table. So on Friday, for example, we've issued an overtime ban at the liquor and cannabis distribution warehouses. Now, that's just an overtime ban right now. We haven't taken any strike action there, but we're being very measured in our approach. We want to compel government to come back and negotiate a deal.
So what position or demands has the BCGEU made that you know that affect more northern and rural remote government employees?
Well, I was just up in the north on Saturday and I spoke directly to several of our stewards that are on the Smithers picket line. The wages just haven't caught up. Over the past decade, the average wage in the province went up 12% higher than the average wages in the civil service. So today, the average wage in the civil service is 2.7% below the average wage in the province. That's felt in rural communities. You see the purchasing power come down quite a bit. That impacts the local economy, especially where you have a significant number of provincial government employees.
But what does a fair offer look like from the BC Public Service Agency?
What we're hoping to see is government come back to the table with a revised monetary offer. And of course, if they do, we'll engage in obviously good faith negotiations with them.
Is there anything else that you think is really important for our listeners in Smithers and Telqua and Whitsett, our smaller communities here, to know about this and how this is going to affect them in the future or even starting today?
Well, this is, you know, what's been already affecting us is the purchasing power of, you know, obviously neighbors, friends, family, the people that work in the civil service that provide these services directly to the community. I mean, the wildfire crews out of Smithers and Telqua, you know, the typical wildfire fighter there is making $28 an hour, right? And so what's prompting, you know, this strike action, while you saw 93% of our membership vote in favor of strike action, is they're simply falling behind too fast, too much, and have been falling behind for the last decade. You know, our contract was below inflation over the last 3 years. It was below inflation over the last 10 years. You know, that's not acceptable.
Did you connect with our MP or MLA while you were here?
No, I didn't have the opportunity.
Mr. Finch, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you to BCGEU President Paul Finch for his time. Now let's hear from workers at the end of town in Smithers at the Nora building, where many ministries operate from.
Hey, my name is Ryan Lapointe. I'm a biologist working for the provincial government, and I'm a member of the BCGEU.
Okay, so I guess just very plainly, talk to me about what we're doing here today.
Yeah, so members across the province and at our work site here in Smithers, we are picketing. We are concerned that the province has been offering us wages that are below inflation. We earned below inflation for our last collective agreement when inflation was high. And once again, inflation is greater than what we've been offered. So we're trying to make our voices felt through collective action.
Okay. And so how long have you been striking in front of the Nora building here?
So we started here on Tuesday this week.
So I guess talk specifically about how you feel workers in the north have been affected by wages not being met by inflation.
Yeah, so, I mean, people are obviously struggling more than they used to with grocery bills, but also far more importantly than just the baseline of inflation, housing costs have gone up dramatically. One of the reasons the employer is saying that they can't afford this is the budget. However, they cut government revenues by over $2 billion this year with the carbon tax cut. It saved me personally a few hundred dollars a year, maybe. My mortgage is thousands of dollars a month more than it would have been without a housing crisis and without that functioning from government. For a lot of workers, that's the only way they can afford to live on the wages they earn is by not living in some of our urban centers. So it's pushing more people into communities in the north because they can't afford it to be in those communities. I love this community. I love living here. I live here by choice. I think most people do. But not having that option, some people don't have the choice, and that's where they're being forced. They're renting a basement in a smaller town in the rural where it used to be very affordable.
What's it like when you're on the line and you're circling the building right now with your signs? What kind of support or maybe even not support are you seeing from the public?
We've had very good support from the public. Our office is in a bit of a quiet part of town, but we've had overwhelmingly positive support from people that's gone by. We've had a number of people honking their horns and waving at us with thumbs ups and smiles. So it's actually been quite a positive experience.
What services are being stopped right now due to the strike?
So a number of services out of this building are going to be affected, primarily things tied to permitting, hunting, long-term regulation of, say, environment, streams, water quality. These are all impacted services. Planning, working with First Nations. But of course, the biggest thing is the permitting and inspecting for mines and forestry. All that planning is halted.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Good afternoon. I am Sharon Hartwell, MLA for Bulkley Valley Stikine. I'm here with Pam in my office in Smithers, and we're going to have a few questions about the strike.
As Conservative representative, do you feel like you support this strike?
Well, I think I support people earning a decent wage, and I find it very difficult when people feel that they have to go out on strike to get their needs met. So I don't want to comment on the ins and outs of the strike because that's not my place to do that. That's between the government and the union. But having said that, I think that people deserve to have their needs met and their voice heard. But on the other hand, if the government of the day had actually listened to the unions early on, maybe we could have avoided it. So I'm hoping they're going to go back to arbitration and talk about what's needed. And you talked about what's concern in the area and the rural communities. And for us here, it's we're doing a lot of work with roads and maintenance and also infrastructure projects that were in the works, as it were. And having them stalled right now before winter is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I respect the fact they have the right to have their needs met and to be out and voicing those concerns. I respect that.
Mm-hmm. Are you hearing otherwise from the public? Just people's concerns about the strike or how they're being affected?
Not yet. We haven't. But I know that there's always been kind of a little bit of pushback by access to offices because things are a little more difficult the way things are going now, or people aren't in the offices where they can be reached for information. And I think that's been an ongoing concern for some time for the public overall, not just particularly for this strike. So finding out, I guess, the right balance for access to government officials and government agencies that are necessary for everyday life for the communities, having the offices located in your community should have access. But on the other hand, like I said, people need to have their voices heard, and they have every right to do that. It's a big stand to give up your time and to be out there because they're not gaining any income to speak of, and they have families. Mm-hmm. So I think, especially in northern and rural communities overall, it seems like our voice is really hard to be heard, and that's always concerned me. So I completely understand the fact that they're trying to make their voice noticed and worthwhile.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
On Saturday, I drove to a property on Old Babine Lake Road. When I found the address, signs warned that you were driving past a runner's crossing. About 30 cars were parked, and drum and bass music was blaring as I walked to meet Rory Luxmore at the BV Backyard Ultra, Roots, Ridges, and Regrets. What's a BV Ultra, you ask? Let's sit down with one of Rory's co-organizers to find out.
I'm Tegan O'Shaughnessy. I started the Smithers Run Club back in February 2024. So the Backyard Ultra it's been around for a number of years. It's gained a lot of popularity in the recent, I think since COVID really. It's a unique format of a race because everybody starts together at the top of the hour when they complete their yards. A yard is what you need to complete every hour. So for this race, we have a 3-kilometer trail and you need to complete that twice in 1 hour. And so we're calling 2 loops of this trail 1 yard. If you're a slow or a back of the pack runner, you're not going to be left behind and be by yourself the whole race, right? Usually you're pretty close to everyone else in the race.
Along with Tegan, Rory was integral to this BV Ultra happening this year. I met up with him at the ridge overlooking the beautiful valley on Saturday on a rainy, cold afternoon. We talked as nearly 30 runners passed us by who were weirdly happy for people who had been running in the rain for 6 hours.
Well done, Colin. Good stuff. There we go.
Russ has always been really generous with sharing this beautiful piece of property, and he's just such a generous person and he loves running, so he wants to share that with other people. What's nice about this format anyways is every lap we've come up with a challenge, and we didn't tell him what the challenge would be, right? So for every one of these challenges, they have to make a decision. Do I expend that energy? So for example, some of them might be a physical challenge. And so, you know, and for each one of these, if they participate, they get a prize, which is great, but then they're expending energy, right?
All right, good work, everybody. Come back and grab your wristbands. I just want to let you guys know that once you complete this lap, you've officially ran a marathon. So for this lap, this yards challenge, I'm going to go a bit easier on you guys, and we're just going to switch it up. So instead of running the yard that you've been running, we're going to run it in reverse. So you're going to come out of the gate and go left.
I think one of the problems with the selling of backyard ultras is that word ultra. Because when people hear the word ultra, it means, oh, it's going to be ultra hard, ultra long, and all the rest. But really, it's ultra slow, because you're meant to go slow, and it's ultra fun. And at least that's what we're trying to make it. And I think from the feedback that we've heard, people are like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. I think one encouraging thing is, like, this weather isn't ideal, but I haven't heard one person complain. And one comment from Brett, he organized the Layers of Pain, which in Terrace. So he introduced backyard ultras to the north. That's the only other one I know that's in the north. And he said, I've never seen so many people so happy in the rain.
The event had a many hands make light work vibe to it. And walking up to a group of people who have one common goal, a goal that isn't exactly your goal, can be daunting. But the environment was welcoming and electric. Tegan ran through some of what makes this event so special for those who participate.
But there's no set distance that they have to do except for the first yard, so it's just as long as you can last?
Pretty much. We had to modify the distance for the backyard where it's taking place at Russell Burry's property. The official format of a backyard ultra is 4.16 miles. And typically, they're also typically in a flat area, which isn't the case here because we live in a mountainous place. So that's why we had to kind of modify a little bit. But typically, a yard, like I said, is about 6.6 kilometers. And if it's flat, usually it takes people between 40 minutes to 55 minutes to complete.
How long do you anticipate this will go till? Like, it starts at 9 a.m.?
Yeah, for people that are trying to go long, they're definitely going to be there past 3 p.m. If Rory was racing, he's directing, so he's not. But if he was racing, I think he'd be here till Sunday night longer.
Really?
If somebody else could keep up to him.
Yeah, wow. It does seem like the kind of thing, like even the website kind of makes it feel like this way, where it's like, just embrace the suck. Would you think that that's true about kind of like the psychology of people who want to run versus people who, like myself, really don't run?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I guess in life you choose what you want to suffer through, really. Whether that's a 9-to-5 office job or, you know, being an athlete, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's sort of just a way to do that. And this race in particular is the perfect way to, I guess, practice your tolerance for suffering, because just the format of it, of running slow for about 50 minutes mm-hmm. and then a 10-minute break where you get to eat and drink and then doing it again, it's just the perfect kind of, yeah,
pace
yeah. for a long day.
My name is Matt Kingsmill from Smithers, BC. Mm-hmm. Kind of new to the run club, but happy to be a part of it.
But what's your involvement here? Don't be shy. What are you involved
with?
Oh,
yeah, I know. I've helped get all the sponsors involved along with some of the other people from the team. Mm-hmm. Got the audio set up going, and then, yeah, got trophies made. And
like, you made the trophies, you mean?
Yeah, I had some help with a buddy. I designed them and he helped me build them and yeah. painted them all up. And
is it of the course? Like, what is the trophy?
Yeah, so the route is I pulled it off Strava from our times running the course and just made the file and cut it out with the CNC machine. And
what would you tell people who, if they're listening to this and they're not a runner but they've kind of always been toying with the idea, what would you tell them about getting started?
Don't put too much pressure on yourself. Mm-hmm. It's literally just one foot in front of the other. It could be 10 feet or 10 miles or whatever. It's all going to come. Today you might run a kilometer. Tomorrow you're going to, you know, progressively get more and more and more. And it does get more comfortable and more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries.
The event, thanks to Matt's loud music, the tents, and the organizers, felt more like a family reunion / festival than a grueling marathon. Two VIPs found time in their very busy schedule to give me a moment to talk about the impact of this event.
What's your name?
Alia.
And what's your name?
Violet.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. What is going on here? Do you know what's going on here today? What's everyone doing here?
Racing.
They're racing.
Everybody's racing.
And do you race as well?
Not me.
No.
I did one lap.
You did?
And her mom is the thing what tells out the people.
Violet's mom is?
Yeah. And Matt is the music player.
Yeah, the DJ. Are you going to be a DJ when you grow up?
No.
What are you going to be when you grow up?
I don't know.
What are you going to be when you grow up?
I'm still thinking about it, but I might not know yet.
Okay. Do you think when you're older, are you going to be a runner?
Yes.
Are you going to be a runner?
I don't know yet. I still got lots of stuff to know. Please, fans and everything like that. So I'm still going to pick.
Are you both going to stay up really late tonight if people are running?
I am staying late.
Wait, you're staying late?
How late? Because I'm camping here for a week.
So do you think you're going to sleep at all tonight? Or are you just going to party all night?
Not sleep.
All right, and for this yard challenge, we're really going to see who has some true grit. For this one, it's going to be a one-minute wall sit. At the start of the lap, we will start the timer. Again, it's optional, but I'll be judged if you don't do
but
it.
But encouraged,
yeah. Oh, people, they're going. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
That's it, guys. Love to see it.
At the beginning of this lap, I was limber, hydrated, and ready to join these hardcore runners for some immersive journalism. So I sent ace reporter Rory Luxmore to the scene to capture good tape from the wall sit.
Why are you doing this event?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm still
trying
to figure it out.
I love it. Kate, Duran, why are you doing this?
Self-loathing.
And what are you doing right now?
Hanging out.
You're doing a wall sit.
I have a better answer.
Yep.
Because depression can't catch a moving target.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, sweet. Yeah, no, I'm here for you, Rory.
Okay, why are you here?
For the fun factor.
Okay, why are you here, Jessica?
To do my first backyard ultra and test my limits.
Awesome.
To clearly do a wall sit.
Why are you here, Brandon?
I came for the cronuts.
Yes, okay, well done. You guys did it.
My name's Jill.
What are we doing, Jill?
Oh, we're doing Roots, Ridges, and Regrets Backyard Ultra.
Which have you encountered most between Roots, Ridges, and Regrets so far today?
You need more rocks than anything, which isn't in the title. Rocks and rain.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Added.
So why do you do this?
I did this event last year. It was far less official.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see everyone went further than they thought.
Yeah.
Like, because you're never bored. It's a social thing, and every lap, everyone says, well, I could probably do another.
Yeah.
So you keep doing another. So I think everyone got their personal bests and longest distances they've ever ran. And it's like surprising. You're surprised by yourself.
What lap are you on now? And like, what's your distance?
What lap is this? Lap six? What?
Yeah, lap eight.
Lap eight? Oh! Thanks, yeah, lap eight.
So how far does that mean that you've run so far today?
So far we've gone 42 kilometers.
Excellent, congratulations. Thanks so much, Jill.
You're welcome.
Another runner allowed me to run with her for a portion of the race as a welcome-ish distraction.
My name is Hélène Fleury.
I was asking you when you were certain that you didn't want to be interviewed. I asked if you were part of the runners club and you said no. So like, yeah, what's your journey with running?
I was on the track team in high school and haven't stopped running since. And with age, I like long distance running.
Yeah.
So this suits me fine. And I was really curious to see how a backyard ultra would be for pace, because if you're going slowly and you get to rest and eat well and a bathroom break, like if I can go longer or how it feels.
Yeah.
And so far so good. It's actually so much easier than doing a regular ultra or, you know, marathon and stuff like that.
Is it because it feels like a different mental game when you know you have that break coming up?
It's a good question. For me, it's the pace.
Yeah.
The fact that I can go slower, not that slow. When I push the pace, I tend to cramp up or, you know, wane. Fall, whereas this is pretty benign.
Do you think people are going to run through the night? This is my last question for you.
Oh, yeah. There's some major keeners here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Will you be one of them?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you. Gotcha.
The BV Ultra's more silent partner is the property owner who you've heard mentioned, Russell Burry, who, though he was hesitant to speak with me for an interview, gave me a glimpse into the softer side of roots, ridges, and regrets.
And so we're on your property, you're hosted, we're in the midst of the BV Ultra right now. But why does this date, why is this special to you?
It's a special day. It's in remembrance of my father, who passed away 3 years ago, tomorrow. So yeah, it just means a lot to me, friends, community, to have this event here and sort of keeping that memory alive.
Because he was a runner too?
He was, yeah. He raced Boston a couple of times and New York and Victoria.
Wow.
And he had some races here as well.
Yeah.
On the property as well.
So is this trail that's cut in, like the trail or the course that's cut in right now, was this kind of his design or is this yours? Whose design was that?
It's a group effort. It's his design. Yeah. Some deer, we got to give some credit to some wildlife because it's game trails too that we're like piggybacking on them, just like with the mountain goats and the baboons, like we're running on their trail. So it's a shared highway in a way. And then the run club came out, helped out with like adding some sections of the trail as well. Yeah,
DJs, you got banners.
I give full credit to the Smithers Run Club.
Yeah.
To our MC Roy over here. I hope you got a chance to talk to him. A whole team of people who helped with all that. That was all these other people here who pulled that off. So yeah, I gotta give them credit. Yeah.
Excellent.
It's been a group effort.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
After running half of a lap and conducting two interviews, I was so cocky that the rest of the lap was gonna be easy for me.
Wait, I'm coming in! That is exhausting!
PB! Oh my god!
I can't believe they're doing that all day! Isn't that something?
I left after my embarrassing attempt to run that day, but welcomed the excuse to eat a lot of carbs when I got home. I woke up to a text from Rory the next morning, who messaged me at 5 a.m. to let me know that the race had just ended, and the longest runner lasted 20 hours and ran 120 kilometers. Rory got this audio immediately after the last two runners completed their final yards.
Yeah, Brandon! Woo! Well done!
Awesome.
There we go, buddy.
Wow.
I'm going to interview you right away.
Oh, good.
Brandon, you are the winner of the Roots, Ridges, and Regrets inaugural Backyard Ultra. How are you feeling?
I'm a little tired. I think I'm ready for bed. Yeah, I think it's funny, you know, like this is like a big run, but it's like, it's not even really a run. It's more like a community event. You know, it's just like the, what we're doing is the thing that's centered around is running, but so much of this is just like the heart of why living where we live is so awesome. You know, an event like this that, you know, Russ put on and you guys all put so much work into this and really to just bring people together, you know? It's not even the running. It's just like getting together with really great people, hey?
Yeah. That's well said. Yeah.
Like when we saw all the kids running this morning, just like poaching laps. Yeah. You know, and they're like tutus and gum boots or whatever.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's what matters. And the bagpipes this morning.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know,
right?
And the costumes and seeing people like do their first half marathon, their first marathon. Yeah. You know, people who probably never, like, they may have never thought they could do that. Mm-hmm. And often running events are so, like, intimidating. You know, we've all been to those running events where it's like everyone's in their kit and they're, like, warming up and stretching up at the start line and, like, eyeing each other up. And that's not what this is.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool event. Thank you so much, you guys, for putting this on.
Thank you.
This is, like, huge.
Thanks. Congratulations.
I'm stoked for next year.
Yeah.
And here's a word from second place runner Ashley.
Yeah, holy cow. So that's, so, you know, so they call us the assist, which is super, super important, right? Like, I mean, because you need two people to tangle, and you were tangling all night. 19 hours, 114 kilometers.
Wow.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
I feel great.
You're not meant to say that.
I mean, I think what I was saying was just, I thought, okay, running around in circles for hours and hours, I thought there's no way I would go this long. I thought it was going to be super boring, but it was super social. I had so many good chats with so many people out there. I met lots of folks. Like, it was so fun.
Thank you to the organizers of the BV Backyard Ultra Roots, Ridges, and Regrets 2025. And thank you to everyone who was so welcoming and open to being interviewed. I know some runners can be quite shy, but as an outsider looking in, it was a really welcoming and very fun event. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.